How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode number 34 of Master My Garden podcast. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland. And what is a really interesting chat, I met Niall a number of weeks ago on the East Coast, Birdwatch Ireland East Coast Nature Reserve. And a really interesting site. We spoke a lot about Birdwatch Ireland, spoke about feeding the birds, how you can attract more birds into your garden and so on. And it's a really interesting chat, so let's get stuck in to this week's episode. Now, this week's episode is a very unusual one, I suppose, for my garden podcast, but it's actually a very exciting one for me personally as well. I'm joined today by Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland, and we're recording it on Birdwatch Ireland East Coast Nature Reserve, which is a really beautiful site. And lucky enough, we have a great morning here as we sit in one of their hides, I guess you call it.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Niall, firstly, you're very, very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And there's so much we can talk about. We've talked a little bit off air, and I have a feeling that this could go on a little bit longer than normal, because it's a very interesting topic to me, and it's an interesting topic to so many gardeners. So I think it's going to be a great chat, and really looking forward to it. But what I suppose the areas we kind of want to cover are people love feeding the wild birds.
Absolutely, yes.
They give so much back when you feed them in your garden, and obviously people love doing it, and it's a lovely pastime to have. So we're going to talk a little bit about how people can attract them in.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about the foods, correct foods, nesting boxes, feeding stations and so on. And we'll get into, you know, how we can garden in harmony with wild birds.
Absolutely.
So by way of starting, I suppose, maybe firstly, you'll tell us a little bit about Birdwatch Ireland and about your own function within Birdwatch.
With pleasure. Thank you. Yes, so I work with Birdwatch Ireland. Birdwatch Ireland is a charity. We're the largest conservation charity in Ireland, and we're dedicated to the conservation and protection of Ireland's wild birds and their habitats, and therefore wider biodiversity, because you can't just protect birds in isolation. It's all about making sure the ecosystems that they depend on function. And in doing that, of course, we're helping human beings to function as well. We depend on those same ecosystems. We humans sometimes are arrogant enough to think that we're not part of nature. We're animals like any other, and we depend on the same air and water and soil as the birds do. So that's a big part of what we do. We have a team of scientists who work on bird survey work. So we're keeping monitoring bird populations. Sometimes people think that we would only be interested in the rare birds, but actually not at all. The studies into the common birds are just as important, because we're more likely to see changes in populations when the birds are common. And we get people all over Ireland doing that for us. We run conservation projects aimed at conserving certain threatened species. So a good example would be just near us here in County Wicklow, we look after the little terns on Kilcool Beach. Okay. We also have a conservation project on Rockabill Island. It's the largest roseate tern colony in all of Europe. We do that in conjunction with the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And we look at other projects for barn owls, for curlews, corncrakes, lots of other threatened species. Do a lot of public outreach work as well. We do work in schools. COVID obviously has put quite a lot of restrictions on that. Yeah. But that's a big part of what we do, talking to groups, doing a lot of media work. We obviously, membership is very important to us as well. We publish magazines. So we're a very, very active organization. We also have a network of 20 nature reserves around the country. So you're here in our flagship, the East Coast Nature Reserve in Newcastle, County Wicklow. We have another 19 of them around the country. And full details are on our website, birdwatchireland.ie, but they're free to the public. You can go in and look around. Some have quite elaborate visitor facilities. Others are much more basic, you know, some walking trails, some signage. But they're all havens for wildlife, but also for people. A lot of people come here, not necessarily bird watchers at all. There's people like to immerse themselves in nature and to see how natural ecosystem can function.
Yeah.
I'm based in our head office, which is in Kilcool, just down the road from us here. Kilcool may be better known to some listeners as Glenroe, because that's where the television program was made. The program is long gone, but Birdwatch Ireland is still there. Yeah. And so, yeah, we still get some Glenroe tourism in. Most people are there for the birds now.
Okay. So this site itself is, as you said, the flagship one. And I suppose it's a very beautiful site, number one. And we're here on a lovely morning, which is great. I suppose the other thing with it is that it's a very diverse site. So you have woodland area, you have meadow area, and you have fen. Mm-hmm. And you're right beside the sea. And farmland on the other side. So obviously there's a big biodiversity there, and I'm sure you're going to get a diverse
array of birds because of that.
Absolutely right. That's why this is such a good nature reserve, is because of that mix of habitats. And that's actually something in a garden setting that I think gardeners should try to replicate. You know, think of your garden as a small nature reserve and try to create many different habitats for as many different species as possible. And you'll find that it works. We have here wetland areas, we have woodland areas, we have scrub, we have grassland. Those can be replicated on a smaller scale in the garden, and you'll be rewarded by seeing a greater variety of native insects coming in. They in turn are food for the birds, more places for different species to nest. Each species has its own niche, and the more of those niches that you can meet and provide, the more species you'll have.
Yeah, I think that's actually something that a lot of people question when they feed the birds, that there's probably a few elements to it. They only get in one or two types of bird, and there's probably a few things happening there. Mm. Obviously, the foods, if you feed only one type of food, it's likely that you will only get in a certain type of bird. So maybe if they feed a more diverse range of foods as a starting point.
That's absolutely it. Variety is the key, because each bird species has its own preferred type of food. And you can tell a lot about what a bird eats by the shape of its beak. So if you look at a bird like a blue tit, for example, I know a lot of people will be familiar with them. Yeah. They really love to eat peanuts. They're one of the birds that benefits a lot from peanut feeder. They also love suet. Most birds like that. The fat from an animal's kidney is full of energy. But a blue tit's beak is small and thin. It's designed for picking caterpillars off leaves. It can take morsels and bites of peanuts, but it's not great at, for example, breaking a sunflower seed or something like that. They have not so much interest in seeds. Whereas if you look at a bird like a chaffinch or a greenfinch, both common garden birds, would you believe actually there are more chaffinches in Ireland than human beings? They have numbers, about 8 million of them. And they have these sort of short, stubby, conical beaks that are for crushing seed. So they're not so interested in going after the small, soft things. They want hard seeds that the birds can't eat. Bird like a goldfinch, they love smaller seeds. Niger seed is the surefire way to get them in.
Yeah.
Another thing to do is to plant teasels in your garden. You'll get goldfinches for sure. Siskins and other small finch benefit from them. They have small, like needle-like tips to their stubby beaks. So it's a different feeding strategy that they have. And then there's some other birds that just won't go to feeders at all. So birds like wrens and dunnocks, two extremely common garden birds, it's only very rarely that they would actually visit a feeder. Sometimes they go to get some scraps that have fallen below a bird table, but mainly they're obligate insect eaters. So what they're attracted to is the insects that are in your garden. And the best way to get a big diversity of insects in your garden is to plant some native plants, because of course our native insects evolved to coexist with our native plants. Take butterflies, for example. There's a small tortoiseshell just flying around the window as we're talking here now at the moment. It nearly came in there. And there's a lot of focus in gardens about things like planting budleaf to attract, its nectar for lots of butterflies. And that's great. It does work. And many other plants do. But that's just the adult butterflies that drink that nectar. What's much more important for butterflies is the larval host plants, the plants that the caterpillars live on. For a lot of species of butterfly and moth, the caterpillars can only eat one or two different types of plant. And that's what they look out for. So sometimes people wonder what they can do to attract more butterflies to their garden. Well, it's actually having more native plants that these butterflies have evolved to live with. And then, of course, by doing that, you're attracting in more birds, you're attracting more hoverflies, all of these things to try to get the ecosystem going in your garden. The way I always look at it is that we have about 1.5 million private gardens in Ireland. And if you add up the acreage of that, it's massive. It's one of the biggest blocks of land in the whole country. And it's something that we, every single one of us, can make a difference. By making one or two small changes to benefit nature in our gardens, if everyone was to do that, the overall benefits across the country would be absolutely enormous.
Yeah, and you can do things like you said. You can add in a wetland, and that can be as simple as quite a big tub with some water plants in it. You can add in a wildflower area or an area that's unkept and let it return to nature itself.
Yeah.
And in itself, it looks. I actually had Sandra Cofola, who's he's the best in the country on wildflowers. And
indeed,
one of his comments, and it stuck with me, is that somebody planted a wildflower meadow, and then they said in the wintertime, there's no great color there. And he was laughing that, bullfinches, chaffinches, goldtits, that they're color galore, I think was his word. And that is absolutely true, that if you're able to create these areas, not necessarily the typically preened, perfect garden, but these wilder areas, that you will attract in, as you said, all types of biodiversity, and that will expand out and you'll have in turn more wild birds.
Absolutely. I think that in many cases, strictly in the past, gardening was seen as like a fight against nature. It was trying to make something as aesthetically pleasing as possible to a certain perception. I think different people have different ideas of beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder after all. And I certainly would agree in terms of having the colourful birds coming in and feeding on the seeds, having things look a little bit more unkempt and not quite so manicured. There's different things for each person, and you don't have to do it for your entire garden. But the more spaces you can give over to nature, which doesn't necessarily mean letting it go wild, but bring it over to nature, putting more native plants in, makes a big, big difference. And I think we're seeing it a lot now, a change in perception as to exactly what a garden should be and what makes a perfect garden. I think that there is no perfect garden. It'll always be a battle. But I think we should learn that it's much easier and more rewarding to work in harmony with nature and use it as your ally rather than your enemy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, nature is, like, if you're trying to keep down weeds, or you're trying to keep weeds totally out of your garden, you will never win that war because it's just the natural thing is that they're trying to come back all the time. So as you said, try and work in harmony with it is an easier way to go, and definitely, you know, just benefits for biodiversity and aesthetically as well.
Yes, most of those weeds, of course, are native Irish plants and wildflowers and plants like that. And they are supremely adapted to grow in Irish climate and Irish soil conditions. So, you know, they thrive better in our environment than most of the introduced garden and horticulture plants that we have. I think sometimes embracing that and trying to garden around that is the best way to go. It's less frustrating, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Just in terms of somebody in their gardening, so you've kind of touched on that they should increase the different types of areas in their garden, as in add in wetland, add in a bit of wild and so on. That'll attract in birds. But in terms of setting up a feeding station, how should somebody go about that, and what should they be trying to provide for the birds to have the ideal feeding stations?
Well, the first thing to say is it can be tailored to any size of garden. So obviously the bigger the garden, probably the more options that you have. But even somebody who just has a window box, you know, an apartment balcony, there's something you can do. But in a typical garden, I would recommend getting either a bird table, or you can get these lovely sort of wrought metal feeding stations as well with hooks on them.
Yep.
And the nice thing about a bird table is you can put some dry foods on top of the platform itself. And that's very handy for birds that aren't very good at perching, like robins and blackbirds. They're no good at really clinging onto feeders. They might try it, but they're not great at it. But then most importantly of all, hanging some feeders off that with a variety of different foods in them. Birds like the tits and the finches are extremely agile, and they love to feed there. And of course, when they're doing so, they're quite safe from predators that might grab them. So we mentioned peanuts already. Peanuts are a very good source of food for birds. They're full of oil, so high in calories, which is what bird needs.
Yep.
You know, if you were to flap your arms up and down all day long, you need a lot of calories as well, full of minerals and vitamins as well. It's very important, though, never to put peanuts out loose. They must always be in those wire mesh feeders. Because there's a risk of choking with peanuts. Peanuts contain a chemical that causes the throats of birds, and indeed of us human beings, to constrict and tighten. That's why peanut butter kind of sticks to the roof of your mouth. It has a natural astringent quality. And if a bird was to take a whole peanut, or even worse, take one back to the chick in the nest, it could easily narrow the throat and would get stuck and they would choke. But with the wire mesh, they can just take a beakful at a time. So literally they're not biting off more than they can chew or more than they can swallow.
Yeah.
And that means that there's no problem there. Quick word about peanuts. It's important to get the best quality ones that you can. You normally, when you're looking at animal food, we'll say not fit for human consumption. With peanuts, it's the other way around. The higher quality peanuts are the ones that the birds need, and it's the second grade ones that go for human consumption. The reason for that is that badly stored peanuts, so they get a bit wrinkled, they generate a toxin called aflatoxin. It's incredibly poisonous. To humans, it isn't a problem. To birds, it's extremely carcinogenic. So making sure that you buy high quality peanuts, don't go for bargain basement ones. There's often problems there. And then when you do have them, if you buy them in bulk, like I do, store them in a dry, cool environment. I keep mine in a plastic box in my utility room. Don't put them in a damn shed or something like that.
Old dustbin is great, actually.
Old dustbin, yeah. Perfect. Absolutely. Then another type of food that's really good is seed. There's many different types of seed on the market. And if you use a variety of different seeds in different feeders, you'll get a variety of different birds. And so one of the best ones of all is sunflower seed. The bigger finches, like the chaffinches and the green finches, they absolutely love it. Coal tits will go for that as well, because although their beaks aren't strong enough to break it, what they do is they take seeds away and they grab them in their foot like a parrot would, and they chisel at the edge with their bill.
I've seen them doing that.
Yeah. They're funny. The coal tit is one of the only Irish birds that takes food away from a bird table and buries it as well for a rainy day, because when it's they're normally caterpillars, but when it's raining, they can't get those. So then they go and dig up some of the sunflower seeds they buried. So they're the birds that are responsible for random sunflower sunflowers popping up around the garden. They planted them. So that's what they do. But you can also get what are sometimes termed sunflower hearts, basically pre-shelled sunflower seeds. So some of the birds with softer beaks can feed on those as well. So the tits love those too. Robins love them. And some of the smaller finches, like bullfinches, go crazy for them. Bullfinches are difficult to attract to feeders, but sunflower hearts do the trick. Then another type of feed we already mentioned was Niger seed. Niger is sometimes sold as thistle seed. In fact, it's not a thistle at all. It's a member of the Aster family, the daisy family from Ethiopia. And it mimics thistle seed though. So the birds like the siskins and the goldfinches that normally look for thistles, they love this. You need a special feeder for it with very tiny holes because it's a very fine seed. So the normal seed feeder, it would just pour out like water.
Yeah.
And if you have a little tray below it as well, it kind of catches it and spills. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit like, I was supposed to describe it a little, it looks the exact same as lawn seed, except it's black in color. And it's as light as well. So any kind of wind will blow it away.
Yes.
So that's why you need a specific feeder with the tray.
Yes.
But goldfinches, I feed peanuts and Niger and occasionally some suet, but mostly Niger and peanuts, and the goldfinches absolutely go crazy for it.
They do. And one of the nice things about it too is that the larger birds, like the crows, for example, they have no interest in it. It's too small for them to bother with. So it's a good way to sort of make sure that the birds you're looking to feed get fed. I mean, I like to feed crows as well. They have a role to play in the garden, but they don't need as much help as the goldfinches do.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned suet there as well, and that is a really good source of food for all sorts of birds. Now, the crows will go for that. They absolutely love it. It's essentially pure fat, although you can get commercial versions now that have mixed in, you know, seeds and even dried insects in it. Get it in the form of pellets, or you can get it as these sort of cakes or fat balls as well that you hang up. They work very, very well. Lots of birds like those. Just a quick word of warning about some of the fat balls that come in those plastic meshes, like you get onions in, those kind of things. Always best to take them out of those and put them into special feeders, because it rarely happens, but it has happened where birds like blue tits, which are very agile, have got their legs tangled in the mesh and have died because they haven't been able to free themselves. So you don't want that to happen, of course.
Yeah.
So just snipping them out of those containers and putting them into a proper feeder works very well.
I think there's been a big move away from that. I see very few now on the market with nets anymore. Just to go back a slight step, and you mentioned to it when you were talking about peanuts, but on the seed itself, so the seed mixes that you can get. Again, I think it's important to highlight not to go for the bargain basement there.
Yes.
Obviously, you can buy them at any level.
Yes.
But the more expensive you go with the more big mix of different types of seed in it, the bigger diversity of birds you'll get in.
Absolutely.
The cheap ones, while they're good value and all the rest of it, they do seem to be just predominantly wheat and maybe one or two other things. So they're not that attractive to a wide range.
That's absolutely right. Yes. So there are some birds that do love wheat. So pheasants and pigeons, they adore it. Other birds will eat it in small amounts. But if you find that you have a seed mix in a feeder and the birds are throwing a lot of it out in the ground, and you think, oh, they're going through it very quickly. In fact, they're probably just going for it. They see a few sunflower seeds, that's what they want. They throw the rest of it out. And so that's what's happening there. I have a few sort of rules of thumb when it comes to selecting different mixes of seed. And some of the blends are extremely good. Things that have millet in it, sunflower seeds, they work very, very well. But anything that you see that has dried peas in it, for example, avoid that. That's just used a cheap filler. No bird has any interest in eating that. It's just to bulk up the weight and make it look, you know, more attractive in the package. They don't want it. As you said, things with too much wheat or barley in it, a small amount is fine, but too much, the birds won't go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So again, variety is the key. And you might need to try a few different blends to see which works best in your garden, because different parts of Ireland are different. We have different birds in different areas. You know, the Midlands a bit different from coastal regions. There's a lot of overlap, of course. But if you, for example, are in an area that has yellowhammers in it, a species that now is very much confined almost to East Leinster. We have them here in Wicklow. They're on the reserve. Used to be a widespread farmland bird. They really do like grain. So if you happen to have yellowhammers or tree sparrows in your garden, then actually having a wheat mix might be a really good thing to have. If you're in a suburban Dublin garden, for example, or in Cork, well, you're not going to get that bird in your garden. Better to go with the sunflower seeds and the millet and things like that.
Okay. Just then, in terms of, so we've talked about the feeding area. People like to put in some nesting boxes as well.
Yes.
And there's different types of nesting boxes. So maybe give us a run through the couple of types of nesting boxes and maybe how someone would go about positioning them. Because again, I think people might stick them on a garden shed, but if you have a lot of activity in that area, it's unlikely that you'll get you know, birds into it to nest particularly. So where's the best places and what types of nesting boxes should people be using?
So there's a wide variety of different types of nest boxes, but it's worth pointing out that there's only a few species of bird that will actually nest in them. The most classic one, the most successful as well, is the one for the tit family, which is basically your standard little wooden house with a little hole in the front of it. And they tend to work very well because the tits are cavity nesters. And, you know, normally they would nest in holes in trees. In Ireland, we have don't have much tolerance for dead trees with decaying holes in them. So it's very hard for these birds to find space to live. And also, till recently, Ireland had no woodpeckers. So across the water in Britain and on the continent, woodpeckers make holes in trees that the birds then nest in, other birds nest in. Woodpeckers have colonized Ireland recently. We have a couple of pairs actually nested this summer on the very reserve where we are now. So at this time of year, they keep a low profile. But if we see one, I'll let you know, because yeah, it's an exciting bird. So nest boxes really do take up a lot of the slack that's missing from our environment. So that's one that I'd recommend for someone to start with. One of the big pitfalls with nest boxes, though, is that people go for a hole that's too big on the front of them. Like, they're easily bought, or may you make them yourself. We have plans on our website. But the hole for a blue tit should be no more than 1 inch in diameter, 25 millimeters. Any bigger than that, and the blue tits would be worried that a more dominant species like a grey tit or a house sparrow would come in and evict them. So they just think, that's not worth the bother. I won't go in. So making sure the hole is small. When you look at it on a box, you think that's far too small. But in fact, birds are tiny. What you're looking, when you see a blue tit, it looks small enough. But what you're mostly seeing is air puffing up feathers, and the actual body of the bird on that is minute. They can easily squeeze through that gap. So that's a good type of box. In terms of where you position one of those, you want to try have it out of direct sunlight, if all possible. It's kind of shaded, as high as possible. Now, beggars can't be choosers. I've seen birds nest in nest boxes that are just a few feet off the ground.
Okay.
But if you can get it 3 or 4 meters off the ground, even better. It's a bit more secure from predators, less likely that a cat will be able to get in. Even stoats sometimes will raid nest boxes. It makes that a bit more difficult for them. People wonder, should it be north facing, south facing? Here in Ireland, it honestly doesn't matter that much. Our sunshine isn't as strong as it would be in southern England or on the continent. You want to have it out of direct sunlight with a bit of shade. That does work. More importantly, though, is you want to have it away from the prevailing wind, because you don't want the wind blowing rain into the hole. Inevitably, some water will get in. So that's why it's important to have a sloping roof on the top of the box that allows the water to drain off the top. But make sure that the sort of lip of the roof is wide enough that the water just doesn't drip into the hole. One way you can get around that is by tilting the box forward slightly on a tree. It has one of those forward sloping roofs, and that works very, very well. And also, it's important to make sure that there are a couple of small drainage holes in the bottom of the box. So if water does get in, it goes right through. It doesn't fill up the box and drown the chicks. And also, if they get a bit damp, it allows air to circulate better and then to dry out any of the nesting material that's in there. Another type of box that works very well is what we call an open-fronted design. So it's one where if you imagine a little box like a blue tit box, but maybe the front panel, rather than having a hole, like 2/3 of it is missing. It's just a sort of ledge at the bottom. That's perfect for birds like robins and spotted flycatchers. They love that. And if you get a slightly bigger one, it's great for blackbirds and grey wagtails. If you live near a river, you might get grey wagtails nesting in there. Now, this is a different type of box because it's not so secure as one of the ones that has a hole in it, you know, that's like a fortress. They're much more open. So you want to have that much lower down in a more secluded area. Ideally tucked behind a bush, something like a holly or something like that, where it's hard for a fox or cat to get through
to get into it.
That's it, yeah. And they should be low down, maybe hip height to shoulder height, no higher than that. They work very well too. So they're the two main designs we'd recommend. But there are other specialist ones for tree creepers, a little mouse-like bird that creeps up trees. They use a triangular-shaped nest box with a little opening at the bottom. And you have also special nest boxes for birds of prey. So barn owls respond very well to nest boxes. If they're in your area, you can get boxes for kestrels. Birds like stock doves will use nest boxes. There's starlings as well. One of my favorites are the ones that you can get for house sparrows and tree sparrows as well, because they live in colonies. And so it's an apartment block for sparrows. You have three separate chambers in them, and like it could be a tower or it could be side by side, like terrace houses with separate entrances, but they're all adjoining each other. And that works really well too.
Right.
So the sky's the limit, really. There's lots.
Little apartment block, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. You mentioned tree creeper there, and I wasn't going to ask about it, but are they common in Ireland, tree creepers?
Yeah, they are. They're a surprisingly common bird. A lot of people don't notice them because they spend all their lives on the bark of trees. That's where they live. It's where they sleep. It's where they nest. They are also very cryptically plumaged. The camouflage is great. So they're a very small little bird. They're kind of mouse-like. They're kind of brown and streaky on the back, white in the chest. But what they do is they creep up tree trunks, never down them, always up them, sort of spiraling up the tree with a little little curved beak, which they probe behind the bark to find insects, and then they fly to the next bottom of the next tree and go up. And one of the reasons why it's very hard to see them is if they hear a person approaching, rather than fly away like most birds would do, all they do is edge around the trunk of the tree.
Okay.
So they keep the tree between the opposite side. So
the reason I ask is that I had never seen or heard of a tree creeper, to be honest with you, but back in, I suppose, the spring of this year, there was a tree that had fallen on the family farm, and my dad went down to take it out.
Okay.
And it was, he noticed something crawling up and into a crack.
Ah, yes.
And it turned out there was a tree creeper. Now he had to look up what it was, and he found out that it was a tree creeper, and there was a nest in it with eggs at the time. So he left it alone, obviously.
Oh, very good, very good.
And they took off after a little while later, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'm delighted to hear that. Yeah, they're as it is with a lot of birds, when you see your first one, you start to realize what they look like. All of a sudden you tend to find more of them. Your eyes are kind of open to
it. Right, yeah.
One of the best ways to find birds, though, is to know their songs and their calls. So the way, I go bird watching quite a lot. I'm walking through the woodland, we're looking at the window of the hide. There's a nice woodland over there. It has tree creepers in it, but it's quite dense. The best way to find them is to listen for them. So I hear the tree creeper calling. It's a very high-pitched, very shrill sound. And then there's a tree creeper in that tree somewhere. And then you look and then you find it.
Okay.
And learning bird song is a great way to learn where the birds are. Also, I'd say it's great fun. To your friends, it'll be like witchcraft. Because it's like, how can you name that bird for a sentence? It's like it's practice like anything else, but it seems magic.
Yeah. And you have the sounds of the birds are on your website as well?
Yes, we have some and we're adding more. It's actually a work in progress at the moment. We're adding sound clips to it. One of the things we celebrate every year as well is our Dawn Chorus. So we have 30 Birdwatcher branches all around Ireland. And usually in early May, we have a whole series of Dawn Chorus walks and talks. This year, obviously, with the COVID-19 situation, we had to cancel all of them, which was heartbreaking. But they're our most popular events of the year. I remember I gave a Dawn Chorus walk a few years ago in Marley Park. It was early May, and the walk was due to start at 4 a.m. We always have to put in the promotion, not a misprint, because people think you go hear a dawn chorus at 7 or 8 in the summer. No, that's not the dawn. You're going to be up for sunrise. And so it was pouring rain, torrential rain. I went out, drove out from Wicklow up to Marley Park in Dublin, thinking nobody would be there. 500 people in the car park waiting.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's quite difficult leading a walk in the dark with 500 people by yourself.
Imagine, yeah.
But it just shows how popular
birds are. A great response.
It is. People love birds. Yeah. And that's something we've seen particularly during the COVID situation, during the lockdown. Visits to Birdwatcher's website went up 400%, especially the garden bird section on it, and also the online field guide that we have. Our membership increased, which was amazing, because all of our membership recruitment events this summer were cancelled. Bloom, for example, obviously close to the hearts of many gardeners. We're one of the busiest stands at that. We have two stands at it every year. It's one of our main. It is our main membership recruitment event. Cancelled, so we thought, we'll be in trouble here. We actually exceeded our targets because. I don't know. I think birds were a great source of comfort to a lot of people during the lockdown, a real connection with the outside world. And I think as well, people were watching the birds nesting and feeding their chicks and seeing life is going on. The world is continuing as normal. What's happening to us humans now will pass eventually. I think there's comfort there.
And I think there was a little bit of the planes are out of the sky, so now the birds are out. But I think, and there could be something in that, obviously, but I think there was a lot of, well, we're actually at home here working, where as opposed to rushing here, rushing to football matches, rushing to work, rushing to school, and they're actually starting to notice these things. So I'm sure there was a little bit of the planes are out of the sky, so there's more activity, but a little bit of, I'd say more of it was that people actually were able to have the time to enjoy it.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that, I was asked by seeing some radio interviews, has the COVID situation somehow led to an increase in birds? And like, no, how could it? They don't spontaneously generate. It may have an effect after the nesting season. So in the autumn or the winter, through our surveys, we may see an increase, we may see a decrease. I don't know. We're scientists, so we'll wait and see. Yeah. We won't prejudge it. But certainly what was happening was that, first of all, I think the lack of traffic noise meant that people were hearing bird song more clearly than they used to. Mm-hmm. But you're right, people are spending time at home. They'd normally be in the office or commuting on the roads and not aware of all the activity that's happening around their gardens at the time. So I think that's a big part of it too. And I think the people as well, when they start to focus on something and pay attention to it, you notice it more and more. An example of that I always love to give, and it's something to listen out for in a couple of months' time, there's a bird called a redwing, which migrates to us from Iceland each year. It's a member of the thrush family. Mm-hmm. It's quite a shy bird around humans. It doesn't come into gardens too much except in very, very cold weather. Great way to help them in cold weather, by the way, is get apples. They don't normally know what bird food is at a bird table. They're not used to people feeding them. But if you get some apples, cut them in half, spear them on branches, it's a lifeline for migrant thrushes like that. But anyway, what happens is they leave in October. They always arrive in October. They leave around sunset from Iceland and fly to Ireland over the course of that one night. They make the jump over the night. And so then what happens is, usually around midnight, 1 a.m., they start to come into Ireland. And if it's particularly cloudy and the birds wind force low and they can't see very well in the darkness, they call to each other to keep the flock together. And it's a very high-pitched little metallic noise. I won't do a good imitation, sort of like, zeep, zeep, kind of sky, sound high in the sky. Now, every person in Ireland has heard this hundreds or thousands of times throughout their life without registering it. And the thing is that once someone points it out to you once, it flicks a switch in the brain and all of a sudden it's impossible not to hear it again. And you realize, oh my God, there's thousands of these redwings flying into Ireland on these dark October nights. I never knew there were so many of them. That's one of the joys of birdwatching to me. When you open your eyes and your ears to the natural world, all of a sudden, the best example really is a switch that can't be switched off again. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, is right, yeah. We have a couple of, I suppose, myths that we spoke about beforehand that I'd like to just put to bed. Back when people started feeding wild birds, you know, with peanuts and so on, it's probably 20-odd years ago now at this stage.
Yeah, they started becoming very popular, I think. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I suppose for a number of years, there was the misconception that you should only feed in the winter months. And I think that misconception is still a little bit there. So maybe you just talk about that, because I know you guys would say now that if you are feeding, it's good to feed 12 months of the year.
Yes, that is the advice now. Absolutely. You'll certainly find that the birds will eat more food from your feeders in the winter. And I'm aware, of course, that there's a cost to this. So, you know, bird food isn't cheap necessarily. So if you have to choose a time to feed for economic reasons, by all means, winter is the best time. It's where the birds need the most help. But having said that, there is no harm whatsoever in feeding during the spring and the summer. It used to be feared that the adult birds would take a lot of this artificial food back to their chicks, and it's kind of junk food for them at that age. Mm-hmm. In fact, the birds have more sense than we ever give them credit for. They know this. They know that their growing chicks need to feed on insect larvae, especially caterpillars and beetle larvae and things like that, because they're high protein. Even birds that as adults are completely vegetarian, like sparrows, they feed insect larvae to their chicks for the first few weeks of life. So by feeding the birds with peanuts and seed in your garden during the summer, what you're actually doing is you're actually allowing the parents to use that food for themselves, which means more of the insect food they collect goes to their chicks. And then once the chicks have left the nest, they're already adult sized. You know, one of the misconceptions people often have in gardens is that they see, a certain small bird flying around, think it must be a baby version of something else. Baby birds, when they leave the nest, are the same size as their parents. They grow amazingly fast and they can eat an adult diet at that point. So it can be a great boost in life if they have food there in the garden. And also, studies have shown they actually don't really rely on the food that much, except in very cold winter conditions. So they're still, you know, they might look like they're coming and going to your feeder all the time. They're still only getting maybe 5 or 6, 7% of their daily food from your feeders during the summer. And they're still eating natural food. That's their preferred choice, really. They just use that as a quick snack or a way to top up their energy. Mm-hmm. So actually, you know, it's a very good thing to feed them during the summer as well. And what the studies have shown as well is that you have probably far more birds coming and going from your garden than you would think. It's not necessarily the same blue tit coming and going all day long from your feeder. You could have 15 or 20 different blue tits coming and going at different times as well. So it's only when you start to study the birds in detail you start to realize those things.
Okay. Actually, that's after raising a question there. I seem to, well, there's certain times of the day,
yes,
when they seem to be awash with birds, and then other times not so much.
Yes.
Is there a particular reason for that?
There are a few reasons. Very often birds will start to feed early in the morning because they've been sleeping all night without any food and they're quite hungry and they tend to be cold, so they want to get a boost in the day. But also they want to be busily feeding too when predators are at their least active, because when a bird goes to a bird feeder, it's exposing itself to danger in a way it normally wouldn't. I mean, normally a blue tit would hang around in trees and glean insects off the leaves. It wouldn't fly across, you know, maybe several meters of open air to go to a feeder, but the payoff makes it worth it for them. But of course, they're exposed to things like sparrowhawks, which can fly in and grab them. Sparrowhawk is a very common bird. There's nothing wrong with the sparrowhawk killing a bird in your garden. Most birds kill and eat other creatures to survive, and that's what sparrowhawks do too. But obviously, you don't want to affect the bird populations that way. So you want to make it as difficult as possible, or as easy as possible for the birds to stay safe. So you'd have cover nearby. So that's something that can happen there within gardens. Yes. But you know, it's par for the course, really.
Yeah. The other interesting thing that I've seen, obviously, the birds in my garden, they eat the most at very cold times of the year, snow, frost, and so on. But I would say not too far behind it when they're fledgling, when the young birds are in the nest, they seem to use a hell of a lot of nuts and niger at that stage of the year as well. So Is that what they're doing, where the adult is eating it so that they can give the insect to the young? Is that what's happening?
Generally, yes, that's what's happening. They may feed some of that food to their chicks, but we know from the fact that if for example a young nestling was just to eat seed, it wouldn't grow, and so there wouldn't be enough protein there. So the adults know this, but what they do is their own energy requirements are through the roof at that stage. They're run ragged when they're nesting. It takes a lot out of them,
right?
And then at the end of the nesting season, so literally around this time of year, this is the time when the birds molt. They replace their feathers. So they actually lose and regrow all of their feathers in sequence. Now, the energy requirements to do that are absolutely enormous. And then many of the birds, of course, think of our migrant birds, like the swallows, the swifts, the willow warblers, the chiffchaffs. They're all in the process of either right now leaving Ireland, like the swifts are in the next couple of months, they're going to leave Ireland. And the energy requirements for that are absolutely enormous as well. The journeys that they make are almost unbelievable. If you take the swift, for example, one of my favorite birds, and a species which is declining, sadly, in Ireland, swifts only come to land to nest. So if you have swifts nesting in your house, you can get special nest boxes under the eaves for them. The chicks will be making their first flight around now. That chick, what it'll do is it's been doing push-ups in its box on its wingtips to build up its flight muscles. And then any evening now, they will go to the edge of the box. They will suddenly be driven to it. They don't know why. They just go to the edge of the box and will fall out of it. And they're like, oh, what's going on? They open their wings. These amazing aerodynamic wings catch the air. It swoops them back up into the sky. It takes a few seconds to get the hang of it. And then what that chick does is it just leaves its parents behind and goes straight to Africa. No one's ever shown how to get there. There's no roadmap. The parents aren't with it. It goes straight to Africa. The thing is, it'll be maybe up to 3 years before that bird is ready to breed itself. It won't land for the next 3 years. So for most birds, like a sparrow or a robin, that first flight they make lasts for a couple of seconds and they crash in a bush. For swift, their first flight lasts 3 years. It seems unbelievable, I know.
It's amazing.
But yeah, isn't it? But they feed on the wing. They get all the moisture they need from the insects that they eat. They sleep on the wing. We only recently worked out how they do it. They sometimes go high in the sky and fly in tight spirals so they won't collide with anything. Or what they also do is they can shut one half of their brain and one eye off and keep one half sleeps while the other one's awake.
Wow.
So they're amazing birds. So what a privilege to have something like that around us. The only reason that bird really lands ever is to lay its eggs and look after its chicks.
And the numbers of swift is declining, is it?
Yes, indeed. And there's various things hitting them. Climate change is almost certainly a factor. I mean, this is a bird that migrates to Africa. It's a difficult journey. It has an effect on, the weather becomes more inclement. They run into storms. That's a problem. But also there are far fewer insects in the Irish countryside than there used to be. I remember as a child, I grew up in South County Dublin, and every year my parents would bundle myself and my sisters into the car and we'd go down to a farmhouse where we'd stay in County Wexford, near Goree. And I love nature even at that age, and I'd always want to get out and look in the fields and look for birds. But the very first thing that my father would get me to do was get a bucket of water and a sponge and clean off all the insects plastered all over the lights and the number plates of the cars. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah.
I go into primary schools today to talk to kids and they have no idea what I'm talking about. They have never experienced this. You might see one or two flies splattered on a car, but if you remember what it was like, they were plastered.
Yeah,
they were
completely covered. I do remember it, yeah.
That's bird food. That's the food that the swallows and the swifts have migrated to Ireland to feed on. That's what they need to give to their chicks. And as that food declines, so the birds decline. And it's a big problem because the migration takes it so much out of those birds, the vast majority of the chicks die. They don't live to their first birthday. So they're living on a knife edge already. And then you have the situation, insects declining, climate change and poor agricultural practices in Africa, widening the Sahara Desert by about a kilometer or two every year. It's another barrier the birds have to fly across. Weather becoming more unpredictable, increased hunting in the Mediterranean, all of this, it's really stacked against them. And so any changes that we can make, even at a garden level, that promote more insects, it makes a big difference, because the biggest killer of all wildlife is habitat loss. Nothing else even compares. Everything's insignificant in Ireland compared to habitat loss. The intensification of agriculture in Ireland over the last few decades has really affected our insect populations and our habitats. We've gone from mixed farming with promoted lots of wildlife and biodiversity into more or less monocultures of Italian ryegrass across the country that supports very little by way of bird life. Now, it's a business, of course it is, and I get that. And it's commerce, and it's important for our economy and for our food supplies and all of that. I absolutely do get that. But I do also think that the landowners who do the right things by wildlife do deserve a lot more support. And I think more of the EU funding that's provided for agriculture should go to them. I think they're doing us all a huge service, not just the birds, you and me. We're benefiting massively. It's underappreciated. But we as gardeners can play a role there as well. As I said, if every one of the 1.5 million private gardens was to have, let's say, 10 native plants implanted in it, they would increase our insect population massively.
Yeah, it's a good point. And on the agricultural front, even to have some level of area in the, obviously every square inch is important now to farmers, but it should be possible to give away, to give back an area to nature on any type of farm, really, to be fair.
Absolutely. And I think that the farmers who should be encouraged more to farm for biodiversity, that should be seen as a very valuable contribution to Irish society and to our global responsibilities for climate change mitigation, for biodiversity increases. You know, the fact is last year, the Dáil declared a climate and biodiversity emergency. You know, we've seen also COVID emergency declared. We've seen lots of money plowed into that. Where's the money for the biodiversity and for the climate? Because that is a massive crisis that is getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, as a society, and we're fiddling while Rome burns. And future generations, getting all serious here, aren't I? Future generations are going to curse us for this. Yeah. You know, it's really serious. And it's something that needs to change.
Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of covered off a good, all it was the other, myth that I wanted to bust, I suppose. again, we spoke about it off air. There's a misconception again that so you're not allowed to cut hedges from the 1st of March until the 1st of September?
Yeah, 1st of September you can cut them. Yes, the prohibited period is from the 1st of March to the 31st of August. That's the cutting prohibition under the Wildlife Acts, yes.
And there's a misconception among gardeners that somehow they're immune to that and they can cut away at any stage of the year. But that's not true. And indeed, I personally noticed, and I kind of was thinking 31st of August, the young birds are well gone at that stage, but it's only actually this month that I have noticed. I have a Portuguese laurel hedge around my feeding area, and there is a lot of young birds still dipping in and out there into the nests. Mm. So for me, I wouldn't cut. You know, previously, I would have thought that it'd be okay at the end of July, but it's obviously not. So firstly, can you bust that myth? It applies to gardeners, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. So thank you for raising this. This is very important to mention. Cutting of hedgerows and clearance of scrub, that is against the law from the 1st of March to the 31st of August, and that applies to everybody. There are certain exemptions for agricultural use, quite rightly for things like road safety, of course, although that's sometimes abused. You know, it should genuinely be for road safety. And very often we would say that sometimes planning can didn't mean the cutting could happen before it became a problem. And local authorities are exempt. But to private gardeners like you and me, it applies to us absolutely 100%. And for very good reason. Those hedges, as you said, they're a real, really important source of shelter and food for birds. Many birds are still nesting at that time. The yellowhammer, for example, a really threatened species in Ireland, they nest well into August. They're a late nesting bird. But also the juvenile birds that hatched out earlier in the summer, they are relying on those hedges for food supply and for shelter. They're still finding their way in the world. They don't know how to cope with predators yet. They're learning the ropes. Yeah. They do need that help. Also, birds, they choose to nest. They might pick their nest site in March or in April, and they're nesting near a hedge because they think, oh, look, there's going to come the autumn, there's going to be loads of berries there. Oh, there's going to be loads of insects in that hedge in July. If that's cut, you're pulling the rug out from underneath them. And then, of course, obviously, there's the direct impact. If a bird is nesting in the hedge and all of a sudden the cutter goes right through it, it destroys the nest and the eggs. But also, the nest could be several feet inside a hedge. And if you remove several feet, all of a sudden the nest is very near the front of it. It
becomes exposed.
It becomes exposed. It's very obvious to a predator. And so that can be a problem. So yeah, we would encourage people, please, to obey the law. For the 1st of March to the 31st of August, please refrain from cutting your hedges.
Yeah, I don't know where that misconception came, but a lot of gardeners seem to have the idea that they can cut away during that period. So yeah, it's good to knock that one on the head. You mentioned a couple of bird species that are under threat or numbers are reducing. You mentioned yellowhammer just now, and you mentioned swift. Is there any other sort of garden birds, or are the garden birds doing quite well?
Luckily, most of our garden birds are doing well. There's a few we're a bit concerned about. One is the greenfinch. So the greenfinch is a bird that's formerly very common in Ireland, and some areas still are. But there's been a very nasty disease that's been hitting them in recent years, a disease called trichomoniasis. And most birds are completely immune to it. It doesn't affect most birds. Humans, and indeed all mammals, we can't be affected by it either. But finches, and in particular greenfinches, are affected badly by it. And one of the ways it spreads sometimes is by contaminated food in feeders. It's a waterborne disease. It's not a bacterium or a virus. It's actually caused by a single-celled organism, a bit like an amoeba, that causes swellings in the throats of the birds when they get infected. And the swellings get so bad that eventually the bird can't swallow and they starve to death. So it's horrible. There's no cure for it and the birds perish. So we're asking people, if you happen to see any sick or dead greenfinches in your garden, please contact us in Bird Return to let us know. There's nothing we can do. We want to track the spread of this disease.
Okay.
No, I am happy to say that what happens is it's a natural cycle of things. Eventually, some of the surviving birds do build up immunity and they pass it on to their offspring and they bounce back. We're already seeing that in the reserve here in Wicklow this year. We've had the highest number of greenfinches here that we've had for over a decade, which has been great to see. So they seem to be bouncing back. But the strange thing about this disease is that you tend to find the birds when they die. Mostly when a bird gets sick from some illness, they feel poorly for a few days, they hide away in the bushes, they fall dead in the ground or scavenged by a dog or a fox or a rat or something. You never find them. With this trichomoniasis, the poor things try to feed up until the moment they die. So they keel over dead on your bird table or on your windowsill or your patio. So you find them. So if you do, please do let us know in Birdwatch Ireland. And if you do have an outbreak in your garden, we recommend to stop feeding for 3 weeks. Just completely take out your feeders, clean them with soapy water and dry them, and then don't put them back up for three weeks. The sad part is you have to, it sounds awful, but you have to let the infected birds die off before they have a chance to infect any of the other birds.
Okay.
It's cruel to be kind.
Okay. And so that's a garden bird that's under threat. Any other well-known bird species that are under threat?
Yes, far too many, unfortunately, and this is a problem we have here in Ireland. One of the ones that's really pressing for us at the moment is the curlew, which is a bird that I'm sure a lot of people will be familiar with from around the countryside. For me, I grew up in South Dublin, went to the Wicklow Mountains all the time. The cry of the curlew was the sound of wild Ireland to me. I can't think of the last time I heard one. Mm-hmm. There's maybe 120 species or pairs of this species nesting now in Ireland. It's not a bird that will come into gardens, but it's a wading bird with a big, long, curved beak. It's our largest wader. And they nest in heathland. Unfortunately, a lot of disturbance there has caused problems for them. Changes in agriculture have affected them too. They nest in farmland too, but they can't nest in silage fields or things like that. So that's one we're very concerned with. It could become extinct within 10 years as an Irish bird. But globally, the population is doing really bad as well. So within a few decades, it could be globally extinct, which is tragic. The corncrake is obviously another famous bird that we've been involved with over the years. The decline of that bird has managed to be halted, but it's never going to return to the levels that it was once at. Again, agricultural change is the reason here. Surveys were done in the 1950s. So in the 1950s, there were 50,000 pairs of corncrake breeding in Ireland. We always count them in pairs because you count the collie males. The females are almost impossible to find. So 50,000 pairs in the 1950s. Now, maybe 120, 130 pairs left.
That's a huge massive drop.
Yeah, and they're just really sort of various fringes of the West where they still occur, some islands particularly. Tory Island, Inishbofin as well, are very good for them. Mull Peninsula and Mayo is good for them. But they're a marginalised bird, and that's changes in farming. Again, there's nothing much in gardens we can do to affect that. What we can do is we can demand that our elected representatives do more to tackle this biodiversity crisis that we have, because it's all connected. Sometimes people would say, well, can you not just breed these things in captivity and release them? And that works for some species where the habitat and the food still exist. But if there's no habitat, it'd be like raising children and expecting them to live in the ocean. We can't live in that environment for a prolonged period of time. It's the same thing.
Okay. So there's a couple of species there that are, under pressure and so on. What about species that are becoming, I suppose, more common? There's a lot more of them appearing, or something that's unusual that has arrived? You mentioned the woodpecker.
Yes.
That previously wasn't a bird in Ireland, and that's a great story. If you want to just tell us how.
I will, absolutely. And I still haven't heard one today. I'm hoping we get one before you leave the reserve, but they're a bit easier to find here during the middle of the summer. But the great spotted woodpecker is a very common bird in Britain, very common in gardens there and all across the continent, and indeed all across Europe, North Africa and Asia. It's a widespread bird from Western Europe right across to Japan. Always been absent from Ireland, which always seemed strange, until about 15 years ago or so, when two totally natural colonization events happened simultaneously. A group of young woodpeckers seems to have flown across from Scotland to County Down, and another group from Wales to County Wicklow, just a bit south of where we are now. And over the last decade and a half, they've slowly but surely been spreading. They're breeding here. We had two pairs nested on this very reserve this year. And I wouldn't say they're common in Wicklow, but more and more we're getting people reporting them from their bird feeders. They're now in parts of County Dublin, in Carlow, in Kilkenny again now this year. And there have been sporadic records even from as far west as Mayo. Not breeding proven there yet, but some birds probably exploring. So I'd say give it another 10 years or so, and this will be a very widespread bird. And it's great to see. They seem to slot into a niche that no other bird is occupying in Ireland. They create all sorts of habitat for other birds to nest in. So it's really great to have them here. And there's some other birds that one that we might see on the reserve here as well is a bird called the little egret. I remember seeing my very first ever little egret in Booterstown Marsh in County Dublin back in the 1980s, when there was a huge group of photographers and people all standing around looking at this rarity that just turned up. You go to Booterstown Marsh today, you might see 20 little egrets standing there. Okay. We have them on the reserve here too. It's a species that was originally from Africa and from the Mediterranean region, but over the course of the second half of the 20th century, this started spreading further and further north until they finally colonized Ireland in 1997. Now, they don't do any harm here. It's great to see them. They're beautiful birds. Remember the heron family? They're a bit smaller than a grey heron, but people you're familiar with. But they're pure white plumage, and they have lovely black legs with bright yellow feet. It's great to see them here. We have to ask, why are they here? And the reason is climate change.
Okay.
This is one of the first birds to show signs of climate change because they need unfrozen water throughout the winter. And they couldn't expand their range through places like France and Germany and Denmark in most of the 20th century because the summer were fine, but in the winter it would freeze. They'd have to move back. It doesn't freeze anymore. That meant they could go further and further north breeding until they finally reached Yall. and now they're the northernmost breeding colony in the whole world, as far as we know, or certainly in Europe. Yeah, most probably the whole world is in County Louth. That's a species that climate change has brought to us. There's a few other examples of the Mediterranean gulls, another species that's done the same thing. So there's change all the time. Some of it good, some of it bad, and a lot of it's signs that something's going out of kilter.
Okay. We mentioned, I mentioned off air that buzzards had become quite popular, or certainly quite visible to me over the last couple of years. And coincidentally, one, I was telling you before we started recording, that one flew into, a young one flew into the window this morning.
Yeah, that must have been quite a sight.
It was a massive thud. We thought the toddler was after falling through the window.
Oh, no.
She hadn't moved, so looked outside and there was a young buzzard just after flying straight and hit it at a rate of knots. But before I even got outside to check on him, he was gone. So everything was okay
on that
front.
That's good to hear.
But they certainly seem to be way more common than they used to be.
They do. And it's great to see that, I must say. And here in County Wicklow, particularly, they're become a common bird. I see them on a daily basis. Driving around the M50 in Dublin, I would regularly see them perched on the lights there. The buzzard is a very large bird of prey, a large member of the hawk family. Sometimes people see them and mistake them for eagles. Now, we do have two species of eagles that have been reintroduced into Ireland, the white-tailed eagle and the golden eagle. They're very rare. They don't really go near people very much. And they are absolutely enormous. They look like barn doors flying through the sky. So a buzzard is big, but it's nowhere near as big as those. So when you see one for real, you know, it couldn't be a buzzard. But for most people, it's the biggest bird of prey they'll ever see. The thing is, if you went back a couple of centuries ago in Ireland, this was a really abundant bird here. They were very, very widespread, very, very common. But they were persecuted. They were poisoned and shot and hunted out of existence because of perceived, totally erroneous threats to livestock. In fact, they pose no threats to livestock whatsoever. I should stress this. You know, sometimes they will feed on a dead or a stillborn lamb, but they're not capable of killing one. In fact, they're a real farmer's friend. They eat, their main food is rats, rabbits, and young crows. So, you know, there's nothing but a benefit to these birds. They're absolutely great. What's happened is that people gradually have realized this. The species was able to recolonize County Antrim, probably from Scotland. And they clung on there for the latter part of the 20th century. And gradually, as the persecution reduced, it hasn't gone completely, unfortunately, but persecution is much less. So they were able to spread down throughout Ulster and East Leinster. And since then, they've gradually gone westwards and southwards. And so they're now breeding in all 32 counties, which is great to see. The stronghold is East Leinster and Ulster still very much so. But they're becoming much more common in places like Cork and Kerry now too, which is really, really good to see. These are amazing birds. They tend to soar, particularly on sunny days. They soar high in the thermals of air, rising warm air in the sky. And they have really, really good eyesight. So they're looking out for rabbits or rats down below to feed on. And the reserve here is particularly good for them. So yeah, it's a bit windy today, but it's sunny. So we might get one out. We never know.
Very good. So we might, as we start to close off, just a sort of a parting word for gardeners on how they can attract birds into the garden as an over, you know,
absolutely
an overview.
So we've discussed a bit about the food and how the variety of different foods and different types of feeders is very beneficial. I would suggest as well that just as important as the food is putting out water for them too. So it doesn't have to be a pond. Ponds are great, but if not that, as you said earlier, just a little basin or dish of water will make all the difference because birds need water to drink and to bathe. So that's another great thing to do there. Anyone's looking for information about plants for gardening and water, nest boxes, all of that, feeders, birdwatcharland.ie. We have fact sheets on all of this. The nest boxes are another great thing to do. One pitfall to avoid is not to put up too many. Normally with, let's say, a blue tit nest box, you don't want to have them any closer than 40 meters to each other. They're territorial. They don't want a neighbor. So just keep an eye on that too. There's also tips on the website there. Then also planting native plants. That's something that really gardeners can do. Benefits the birds, benefits the insects, benefits all of biodiversity. So that's really important. One of the things, if you don't mind the cheeky, shameless plug, that another thing you can do is to join Birdwatch Ireland as a member.
Yeah, we can really support you. It's a really important part of what you guys do, and absolutely plug away and direct people to where they can become a member and all your social channels as well, which are great.
I don't need to be asked twice. Thank you very much. That's great. Yeah, it really does make a big difference to us. And, you know, we know that the people who care about their gardens are more in tune with the natural world and with the environment than others. And people do develop a love of birds. As I said, during the COVID lockdown, birds became a real source of solace and comfort for a lot of people, and entertainment as well. And I think there's a duty on a lot of people to give something back to the birds here. Now, we are the largest conservation charity in Ireland, so all the money we raise through our membership goes to support those birds, make sure they're around for future generations. You get a lovely few gifts when you join. You get a lovely welcome pack with a poster all about Ireland's garden birds, information on seabirds too. You get to go to our 20 nature reserves around Ireland. You can attend over 450 different events throughout the year, bird watching walks and talks. There's beginners at every one of these. You're very, very welcome. Obviously on hold at the moment because of COVID, but we're going to resume them ASAP as soon as the situation allows us to. You then get a lovely magazine called Wings that comes out four times a year. It's a quarterly magazine, so each one tells you what to watch out for each season. There's always a section on wildlife-friendly gardening. There's guides to Ireland's birds, information about our local branches, where to watch birds in different regions. The current issue has a big section on Kilkenny City, where to watch birds there, which is great. We also, for our junior and family members, we have a children's magazine called Bird Detectives as well, which is full of practical things for kids to do. It's not just about reading and doing that. It's about getting your hands dirty. It's about contributing to our surveys, which is another thing you can do as a member too. We love that. But I think that one of the things when I go to schools, which I love to do, talk to kids. There's always kids there who are very interested in wildlife. But the kids who are interested in wildlife tend to know a lot more about the wildlife of sub-Saharan Africa or Antarctica or Australia than they do about their own back garden. And it's great that they know that stuff, but the fact is the things that go on in their own, around their own homes, is every bit as fascinating, but far more relevant to their lives. Yep. So that's very much our ethos. We want people to know about native Irish wildlife as much as possible. So that's another benefit you get there from membership too. But the biggest benefit of all is that you are supporting conservation. Every cent of that money goes to the birds. And it's something I'm passionate about because I know the great work that my colleagues do. It makes a big, big difference. So people can go to birdwatchireland.ie. You can join on and join online there. You can give us a call too. The number, it's 01-2819-878. And you can reach us there. And also get in touch with us. Any questions or queries you have, you can go on to, we're very active on Twitter, birdwatch.ie, or on Facebook, look for Birdwatch Ireland, you'll find us there. Ask us anything you like and we'll get back to you very quickly.
Yeah, and the social channels are great actually, the amount of information and I suppose the amount of people from around the country sharing their stories, sharing their pictures. It's a very, very interactive and good site to be involved in.
Yes, I think that if you're listening to this and you think you have a sort of burgeoning interest in birds, but you think that there's no one else out there like you, there are thousands of people out there like you. We've all had to start somewhere, and you'd be surprised just how many people are getting an interest in birds at the moment. You're not alone.
Yeah, it's great. It's great, and it's, as I say, I think we said at the start, it's whatever you do in terms of feeding the birds in the garden, they really give a lot more back than you give, because you're getting so much enjoyment out of them. To look out the window and see goldfinches fighting over Niger seed is, it really is something cheerful about it. And you could sit mesmerized for a couple of hours watching them. So
I often do. Absolutely. It never gets old. I never get tired of it. And the things we're learning, even just about the common birds in our gardens, there's lots that we don't know about them. And, it's great. And we have a special survey people can take part in their gardens this winter called the Irish Garden Bird Survey. It's basically over a 13-week period. You keep track of the different birds that come to your gardens. You record the high total for each week of the 13 weeks. It might sound a little bit complicated, but we have a set of instructions that set it out very clearly. And once you get used to it, it's very simple. And from that, we build up an amazing picture of what's happening with gardens all around Ireland, because we have thousands of people who voluntarily contribute their data to us. And, that's something that we just couldn't do without the support of gardeners all over Ireland. So that starts at the start of December. So from November onwards, we'll have details on our website. And for Birdwatch Ireland members, they get a special garden bird survey sort of insert in the Wings magazine in November as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good and important thing for people to do, and obviously a little bit of fun in it as well. So if people wanted to do it in conjunction with schools or play centers or whatever, that's it would be very interesting on that front for people to get involved in.
Absolutely, we definitely encourage it. We have a special schools version of it as well, adapted for classroom use, so it's great.
Oh great.
Yeah,
and details of that on the website as well.
Details are on the website, and we'll have the forms on the online portal for this season. Will be up in November because it doesn't start till December, so you can read the information on how to do it, see the previous year's statistics and articles about that, and then it'll all kick off in December.
Brilliant. Niall, this has been a fascinating chat, as I thought it would be, and we could talk for hours. There's questions popping into my head here all the time, but I suppose we'll start to round off there now. It was a brilliant chat, and thank you so much for coming on Master My Garden podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to your listeners. I really enjoyed meeting you and showing you some of our reserve. And so let's, on the way back now to the car, let's see if we can see one of those woodpeckers.
That's great. Thanks, Niall.
So that's been this week's episode. A huge thanks to Niall. It's over a month ago since I actually recorded the interview itself, and I'm editing it now in the middle of September for just ahead of the wild bird feeding season, and listening back to it, it's every bit as interesting as I remember it to be. It was a really great chat. Niall was very enthusiastic about all things to do with birds, and very enthusiastic about his job, which is great to see. Since that interview, I've become a member of Birdwatch Ireland myself. So interested to see this, what the Wings magazine and all those bits and pieces that come with that. So yeah, it's a really brilliant thing to do. And as I said, when you're feeding wild birds in your garden, you really get way more enjoyment than effort that you put in, you know. So it's a great thing to do. That's pretty much this week's episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share with all your gardening friends, and be sure to let us know if there's anything you want me to cover. Email info@mastermygarden.com, and you can find us on the social channels, which is Instagram at Master My Garden and Facebook at Master My Garden. So that's pretty much it. Hope you enjoyed it, and until the next time, happy gardening.